Thanks to our sponsor, Walker Digital, who've stepped in to help the Numbers Game podcast with their social media. Walker Digital are a digital marketing agency covering strategy, content, video, implementation, and education. The team at Walker have spread the word of our clients and love working with businesses doing good things, helping them to grow and reach more people so they can scale and get larger. I know personally, the first thing I did when growing our business was to outsource social media, blogs, and copywriting because I knew it was something that was not the best use of my time. And the team at Walker Digital smashed it. Sometimes you need to walk before you can run. Find out more at their website, wlkr.digital. This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed. Welcome to episode 44 of The Numbers Game. I am back. It's Jason here with Nick and Marty. I've had Greg filling my shoes for the last 2 weeks. And look, just before the show, Nick basically told me that I was going to be made redundant if I keep stuffing up the way I was stuffing up. So pressure is on. Boys, how are we going? Did you miss me while I was gone?
Oh, mate, so good to have you back, Jace. It's I thought you would have come back refreshed, looking so relaxed. You look like you're 2 days back in the business and you're back to where you started. So just, it's good to have you though. Greg was fantastic. A lot of great insights, but it's always good to have the person at the top of the show controlling things so beautifully like you do. Nick, how are you, my friend?
I'm well, Marty, back in the office post-COVID, so feeling re-energized and happy that I know it at least exists. Happy that I got through it. Great to see Jace again, back with some facial hair, mate. I thought it was gone for good, but it's come back. What's happening there?
Yeah, Case wasn't overly impressed with it. And early January, she said, "Oh, you should grow a beard." And then mid to late January, she said, "No, no more beard." And
now it's back.
It's now April. So no, it was never gone.
I feel like it's bushier, like, or
a couple little trims,
got more volume or something.
Yeah, it's just kicked a gear. So,
I'm so envious. Yeah, you could grow hair on your chin, and I'm growing it everywhere else, bar my chin. It's very discombobulating.
Yeah. Guys, well, let's crack in. What have we got on today? Nick, what have you got for us?
I'm going to touch on the F1s on the weekend. And whilst it was a fantastic weekend, there was one major disappointment. So I'm going to talk about that today.
And I'm going to talk about all things regarding getting a pay rise proactively. So I think this will be really good for employees out there. We'll be talking about it from their perspective. So I think it's going to be a good one. Jace, what do you got?
And believe it or not, guys, I have another sneaker-themed story for you guys off the back of my Nike story and then the sneaker cleaner laundry guy. I've managed to find another story about sneakers, so bear with us. It's a good one.
Oh, we love another shoe story. Let's play.
All right, reading the play, I'm back involved after a week off, and it's probably my favourite segment. We like to bring you guys tips, tricks, stories that have caught our eye, and this week I've come across another sneaker story, as we were saying. It's in news.com.au by Alex Turner-Cohen. I'd like to give a bit of credit where credit's due. This time the story, guys, was around Mr. and Mrs. Cosma, so that's George 36 and Olivia 30, big fans of streetwear. Now, they started a side hustle before COVID, I think it was 2018, called Waves. They got an Instagram page, Waves.au, and a website as well. It's an online store for accessories, clothing, sneakers. And when you think sneakers, think like popular Air Jordans and Yeezys, like a little bit more rare, expensive, hard to get sneakers. Now, 2020, we all know that COVID hit and it was really hard to get into shopping. Now, everybody in Australia except Nick Riley started shopping online. I think Nick just recycled the same clothes over and over again because the guy doesn't like to do online shopping.
This is true.
Now, this is true. George and Olivia basically had to give up their day jobs because their online store, which was their side hustle, just went bloody bonkers. Last year in 2021, they did 10 million revenue from their side hustle online store, and now they're on track for $15 million revenue this year coming. Back in the day, Mr. Cosma saw a gap in the market. He thought, you know, there's just not really a lot of great places online to shop for this rarer, harder to get streetwear and kind of exclusive stuff. So him and his wife kind of bought the first $5,000 worth of merchandise and started turning it over from their basically spare bedroom in their house. Now, at the time the pandemic hit, they'd built it up to $50,000 a month worth of stock they were moving. And then it was going up to $100,000 a week really quickly till in their biggest month during COVID lockdown, which was late last year when Melbourne and Sydney both went into lockdown together, they did $1.8 million in a month. They've now got 15 full-time staff. In the meantime, they've had a three-year-old and a six-month-old. Now they've got a three-month-old and a six-month-old. So they've grown all of this while raising a young family. And now they've opened a physical store in Moorebank, which is in Sydney's west. So, guys, I just love a feel-good story about a couple of small business owners or, you know, and I think George was working as a security guard or had a security company, and Olivia was in laser hair removal. And they've just gone all in on this online store selling sneakers. And I must admit, when I went to the website, I was very, very tempted to pull the credit card out. There's some very, very nice looking sneakers on the Waves website. But guys, just a nice feel-good story to get me warmed up and back into the numbers game. Love those numbers too, like 10 million revenue moving. I think that's 100 to 150 sneakers a day they can get orders for sometimes. That's a lot of bloody sneakers and a lot of clothing to move to be hitting 15 million this year. But there you go. It's, if you identify a gap in the market, you know, these are the things you can do if you're thinking ahead and identifying things that people need. What do you think, boys?
So the gap was, did you say hard to get stuff?
Yeah, so the market was for these sneakers like Yeezys and Air Jordans and an online store that was more around authenticity as well, like guaranteeing the authenticity, because people were going onto eBay to buy Air Jordans and they were turning up and they were fake or they weren't authentic. They were just, you know, a cheap ripoff. So by creating this online store and having Trustpilot and PayPal and all the, you know, the different things that create trust in an online store, they were guaranteeing the authenticity of the sneakers they were selling. And then they also created an online platform. So Nick, if you had a pair of Air Jordans that you wanted to sell, you knew they were worth around $1,000, you can post them into Waves. They'll sell them on consignments. They'll list your Air Jordans on their site and they'll keep a 15% or 20% of the revenue that they make from selling your shoes for you.
There you go. Who would have thought?
That's very clever. It's like a shoe aggregator. It's
yeah, really cool.
It blows my mind, the whole, I think we've spoken about the sneaker market before, and it just blows my mind.
There must be such a demand. I mean, like I said, I try and get sneakers without laces now because I just can't get down to do the laces up. So, you're in another stratosphere here in coolness. So if you see something that's laceless, maybe a shout out to them to see if they can just fill my wardrobe with usable footwear. So but good stuff. I mean, great numbers. Like I said, it's amazing how often people have a side hobby or a passion that ends up turning into a business, but it's rare you get those types of margins and turnover and such reach. So obviously a lot of high intelligence in the strategy as well. So good on them.
I was impressed because I actually registered a company called Sneaky Street about 7 years ago, and I wanted it to be like streetwear for sneakers and cool streetwear, and I wanted it to be a bit sneaky. It was online, it was exclusive and hard to get, like you had to like kind of register and be referred to become a customer. But anyway, a lot of ideas and too many things going on, and I never did it, but George and Olivia did. So well done, George and Olivia. I love your idea and I love what you've done, so congrats.
Yeah, well done,
Marty.
Great effort. Yeah, I wanted to talk about Domain, the property website. And they've made it an interesting play, and I think it's probably thinking of a side strategy to, you know, realestate.com dominating the market. But they've actually purchased a tech campaign management platform company called Realbase for $180 million. And if they hit certain targets, they'll get another $50 million kicker on top of that, which is quite nice. But Realbase is the fastest growing property tech business in Australia and New Zealand, established in October 2020. So two of Australia's largest property marketers combined forces, and they basically cover everything from social content to digital campaigns for agents, all the way from listing through to settlement. But they also do print cover, signage, brochures, content creation for media as well. So they're looking at, Domain's looking to expand their agent solution services. This is how they feel they'll make a real impact in the market. And Realbase generates about $22 million worth of revenue with $9 million net profit pre-tax. But it just, I think the key takeaway for me is that, you know, you have IQ, we talk about EQ, but DQ, digital intelligence, is really the next play in these types of markets. And how do they service those agents in a different way? So we're not just listing properties on the site. How do we give them relevant solutions that they need in their marketing strategy, in their signage, their boards they put out the front of houses? And I could just see that they could see a real upside in it. And I was trying to sort of relate it to the finance equivalent, but it's almost like we have an aggregator that supports us, AFG, and it's like them doing all our digital marketing and all our signage. And it's so I'm still struggling to get exactly how scalable it is. But I feel in real estate, there's more of an opportunity because there's so much that needs to be done on that marketing side that's relevant that they're doing now. But yeah, I thought that was interesting, boys. Interesting angle. What are your thoughts?
I'm just quickly worked out the multiple on the price.
Yeah, I know.
Did you think
right?
that's true? Is it 20x? Am I right? Did you say 9 million?
9 million net profit before tax.
And yep. It was a $180 million purchase before the 50 quicker.
$22 million of revenue. So they must see a massive, massive upside, but it's nine times on revenue. It's crazy. 18 times on net profit.
Interesting one. Watch this space. Watch this space, hey? I mean, they're those ones that you got to sit back and go, where will it be 1 year or 5 years from now? And remember this moment where what it was purchased for and see what they have to do to get an ROI, because it's some big numbers.
They must think there's a huge distribution chain, obviously, to target. And they must be thinking five times that revenue. Well, it'd have to be nearly 50 times that revenue of what they're going to bring in the future to warrant that type of price. So
it's an interesting move, and I think it's a ballsy one, because one thing that we do know is that Domain just cannot catch realestate.com. They've just got such a market. They've just got such a big percentage of the market, and you look at what realestate.com have done as far as going to other services such as mortgages and whatnot. They've gone heavy into the mortgage space. So I don't know. This is a play that is probably a little bit left of center, where they can grab more market share because they can't seem to get it done organically, or they can't seem to get anywhere near realestate.com. So,
Nick, tell us about the F1s. What's going on?
The F1. So today is the 11th of April, and we had a great weekend for the Formula One, or the return of the Formula One post-COVID. I was there on Friday, just a fantastic event. I think we had the biggest crowd we've ever had, 400 and something thousand across the 3 days. Daniel Ricciardo finally finished in the points, so he came sixth, which was great. Ferrari won, so, you know, every Italian in Melbourne was all of a sudden, you know, bringing up their Italian roots and were Ferrari supporters. So it was just a great weekend, and I actually live around the area, so there was just such a buzz. It was great to have it back. However, living in the area, there is one thing that you look forward to every year, and that is the fighter jets coming over. Just before the race. So, you know, if you live in within a 10K radius, you can generally hear them. And for a lot of places, you can actually see them. I was there on Friday and, you know, looked up the schedule and went, yep, air display. Couldn't wait till the fighter jets. We're all talking about it and it didn't happen. And then I thought, well, okay, well, maybe they're just going to do it Saturday and Sunday. They definitely do it Saturday. Saturday, I was actually at home looking in the sky. Saw one of the old planes flying around, nothing happened, no fighter jet, and then Sunday the same. And I thought, what is going on here? So made me Google it, and as soon as I Googled it, it wasn't hard to find what was happening. But Formula One have actually cancelled or have told all of the promoters, so, you know, obviously Australia being the promoter, that the use of military aircraft is no longer allowed in as part of the pre-race entertainment or pre-qualifying entertainment. And the reason is it's not in line with F1's CO2 emissions reduction plan. So F1 are trying to be, or trying to eliminate its environmental impact by the year 2030. Obviously, when you see those planes fly, it's obviously not good for the environment just by the trail of pollution that they leave behind them, and it sort of sticks around for 10 minutes or so. So it's interesting because they're still letting the older planes fly around and the roulette planes fly on Saturday and Sunday. Some people are saying that it's got nothing to do with the reduction of the CO2 emissions, and that it's to do with what's happening with Russia and Ukraine at the moment, and that the flying over of military aircraft is an opportunity for countries to flex their muscles and demonstrate what they have as far as artillery goes when we're talking about aircraft and warplanes. So that was very interesting. And as much as I think it's far-fetched, I could kind of believe that that would be a reason. But, you know, I just think there's so many things that they can do to reduce their CO2 emissions. And, you know, we've been talking about it in our business, not just being, you know, neutral as far as your carbon emissions go, but actually giving back and doing something to go beyond that. And I think getting rid of the fighter jets, to me, was a big mistake. I know there's so many, particularly kids, that just are in awe when that happens, and it drives so many people to the F1. So for anyone who was out there wondering where the hell were the fighter jets, that's why. And moving forward, they won't be there. So very disappointing.
I was one of them. I run out onto the balcony. I'm within the distance to be able to see and hear as well. So I run out on the balcony and look down Chapel Street, and usually they end up our end of the woods, and it's exciting. It's part of the whole F1 experience. But the interesting though, the six old planes were also flying around for ages on Friday. And again, same thing, a trail of pollution behind them or whatever's coming out the rear end. And those six, what are they? The skilled combat.
I think they're called the roulette.
Yeah. And they flew around for ages. I think I was going to a lunch Friday in St Kilda at about 1, and then I could hear the noise overhead for an hour, like they were just circling around doing their thing. So if they were there Friday, Saturday and Sunday, you think maybe you could ditch them on one of the days and exchange their pollution for the fighter jets?
Well, boys, I'm surprised they let the cars still go on the roads, mate. It's, you know, it's like, what are they going to do? Are we going to get hot air balloons just sailing across? Not quite the adrenaline and excitement, but the flexing of the muscles. I don't think we should be utilising the Grand Prix as flexing our muscles. I think it's always been a lot of fun, and there is a balance, isn't there? I think it's absolutely important everyone remains socially responsible. But geez, it was so much fun. It was great. I remember just love it. Even at the MCG at Anzac Day as well, they used to have the fighter jets fly over. It was exhilarating, and that stopped as well. So
it doesn't matter how many times you see it, you just cannot prepare yourself for it. It's just, you know, it's exciting when you're 12 years old, and it's exciting when you're 39. Like, so yeah, it's interesting. And I think what we do in Melbourne, must be small fry compared to some of the other countries. You know, we just generally have the one jet that flies over and does a display. Maybe the other countries were going all out, you know, as far as flexing muscles go. I haven't looked at that, but yeah.
I was going to say, it'd be for us, it'd be the flexing our lack of muscle.
That's right.
Like, well, it's always just one jet, right, that comes and puts a show on. So
we'd have to have our two submarines just show themselves in the bay and go back down, real position of strength.
Yeah. So anyway, great weekend either way.
We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au.
All right, listeners, it's now time for that special part of the podcast where we go into losing it, where we learn lessons through making mistakes in the hope that our audience doesn't make the same mistakes. So today, Jason is going to take it away. Jace, what have you got for us today?
Here we are. So today's episode, we're kind of talking about pay rises and how to ask for a pay rise. And Marty, you actually threw that topic out to me the end of last week. And coincidentally, I'd actually come across something on Facebook, part of a few different groups, like the Zero Partner Facebook group, the Small Business Accountants group, and then I think there's one like Tax Jobs group for people moving jobs in the tax and accounting industry. And one of those pages, I think it was the Small Business Accountants Group. I'm going to change the name. It's not the real name, but got my notes here. Natasha, she had posted a post around what people were being paid and the right way to go around asking her boss for a pay rise. And it actually shocked me and surprised me to learn that she had not had a pay rise for 10 years. Natasha then went on to, as she's seeking advice in this Facebook group, to how to go about talking to her boss, with a lot of people, you know, sharing the same sentiment and you know, shock that it had been 10 years since she'd had a pay rise. She shared some numbers around what she was on. She was on the equivalent of $65,000 or roughly $33 an hour. Annual, like, and she, you know, whether she was part-time or full-time, it was prorated. And she discussed that she'd looked at the market and saw that for her experience and for 10 years, she believed that she should have been on something closer to $50 an hour, which would have put her up at around the $99,000 salary ballpark. Now, I sat there just like completely blown away at the fact that this loyal employee had sat there for 10 years working away for this one business and had never been approached for a review, career progression, how are you going, how are you finding your job, you know, CPI pay rises, whatever the standard is. And I know that that's half the problem, is that there is no standard approach to this, which is why, you know, we're sharing this episode today. I actually didn't realize how bad it was. The amount of comments that this post got, she was not alone, to which I sat there thinking, you know, how is that possible that there are so many people out there that haven't got pay rises? But guys, I don't know whether, you know, we roll straight out, but from a losing it perspective, have you come across people in your day-to-day work where you've noticed that they've been on the same pay year and year and year out and nothing's changed? Or does that shock you guys a little bit as well from your backgrounds and where you've come from?
Not so much in I guess, the finance industry, but certainly when I was mentoring people, yeah, that happened quite a bit. And I think one of the main things that held people back was they were worried about what their employer would think of them by asking for a pay rise, which struck me as very, very strange. Like, it's almost like they didn't want to rock the boat out of that loyalty. And 10 years is a long time. But the interesting thing you said was, even in the situation that I'm thinking of, this gentleman that I was working with, he really was concerned about bringing it up, and he didn't know how to bring it up. And that really surprised myself. I thought, wow, that's, you know, you've been there for a long time. It wasn't quite 10 years like Natasha, but you've been there for a long time doing great work, and you're still feeling that's not the right thing to do, and it should be led by the employer. So I found that was a really interesting point.
Yeah, I think from my point 100%. Of view, I haven't seen it yet, like Marty, in our industry, but I can see how it would happen very easily, particularly in small business. Not so much 10 years. I think that's obviously just, you know, incompetence from the business owner, really, and possibly greed. But in a small business where you've got a small business owner running extremely hard to keep the business running, focusing on, you know, account, we've spoken about this stuff, focusing on accounts, focusing on bringing revenue in, HR is almost at the end of the list, and not by purpose, but small business owners just don't even think about it because they're not exposed to it. That's what my theory on it is, and I can relate to it because I know for us it didn't become a thing until we got a certain amount of staff and certain things started happening in our business, and then we were forced to start to think about it. So I'm not surprised, I guess, mate, is what I'm saying, and I don't think in a lot of instances it's the business owner's fault to a degree. I think it's maybe just a little bit of naivety or ignorance. So I think as employees, which we're going to talk about, you need to be one that's controlling your own destiny to a degree. So yeah, I think it'd be quite common in small business, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a really good point, Nick. And I think as an employee, you hit the nail on the head. Like, business owners, small business owners are very busy, and I could see an employee getting very frustrated with the employer by not communicating that transparency of what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. But really, in small business, yeah, you do need to be that driver of your own career. And I think, you know, that never feel ashamed of, if you're doing a good job, to approach your business owner or your employer and have that discussion and set some time and set some parameters around what you would like it to look like that's fair and reasonable that the employer is going to give you positive feedback on. So I know that sounds like a cop-out that the employer should be doing it, but in small business, sometimes it's just, and in particularly in the case I was talking about, it wasn't that the staff member wasn't valued. He was absolutely valued, and he ended up getting the pay rise once we, and we'll talk about that in the one percenters once he approached it. But the possibility, the danger for the employer would be the first time they'd recognize it is when he's been offered another job elsewhere for more money, right? And yeah. So what was a friction point could have quite easily been overcome with good communication and transparency and around that opportunity of the pay rise. So
100%. Well, we might as well take this straight into the one percenters because we're talking about how to go about asking for a pay rise. And Marty, I might even throw it back to you around, we're talking in the show notes, what around what you thought was important or what your expectations are if someone was to come to you for a pay rise.
Yeah, for me, like you've got to be very careful in the corporate world, I feel sometimes, because it's a place where you could do 70 or 80% of target and expect to be rewarded for that. And I've always thought of if you're looking for a pay rise, get in the habit. We've talked about habits in multiple episodes. Get into the habit of exceeding your targets. Like just set it as a, whatever the target is that you've agreed upon to hit, always exceed it. So straight away you're coming in as that type of person that not only achieves the target, but even getting into the habit of exceeding it. That's a wonderful, wonderful start. And then it's just purely a discussion about where you want to go and come to the employer with where you're taking your role in the next 12 months. So to me, that's really exciting. When I see an employee instigate that opportunity, they're going, look, I'm going to do this. This is what I'm bringing to the table. This is what I'm doing around my sales. I'm getting some outside support as well. And this is the target I want to hit to stretch myself. When they're leading, I find that the top performers in business almost lead the direction because they're so motivated. But what you don't do is ever come hitting 70% of target with your hand out expecting a pay rise. That's a very challenging thing for an employer to see because we know we're always trying to exceed where we're at. You know, we're always trying to push and do better and develop ourselves. And when you're in that same headspace, employers love it. So I feel like that's how I'd always want to. And then as a manager of that person, it shifts the focus to how you can help that person get there. Instead of it being a performance management type of scenario, you're going, okay, fantastic. They've given evidence that they can achieve a target and exceed it. They've thought about the way forward. They've got some key elements they want to focus on in this next 12 months, and they're giving me a demonstration of how they're going to execute on it. Then your role becomes, well, I'm excited for them. How can I help them develop to get there? So that would be my approach. And you're always willing to give some extra scope to people that are approaching it in that way than just with the handout going, I've been here for a year or 2 years and I should get more. That doesn't quite cut it. Nick, any additions to that?
The thing I mentioned earlier was just create your own destiny. And unfortunately, as I said, whether it's right or wrong, small business owners do get very, very much sidetracked with keeping the business alive. And, you know, they don't have time, whether it's right or wrong, to proactively think about the career progression of their staff. And so I'll just encourage people just to understand what do you want out of that role? Is it the right role for you? Maybe you need to find a different employer if you're not getting what you want. And as you've rightfully stated, Marty, if you go to your employer with a bit of a plan on what you're going to do, that would be like a breath of fresh air because I'm thinking as an employer, geez, this person is in my business, wants to improve and wants to help me take my business to the next level. So the other thing I think that should do then is then if you've got a career path in your own mind that you want to follow, and that business is the right business for you, and then you present that, then the next step is, you know, the ongoing reviews of that, and, you know, almost forcing your employer to review you, almost forcing your employer to help you grow, and that in turn will then force your employer to have to give you a pay rise as your skills lift. So, you know, create your own destiny, and then, you know, be prepared to go somewhere else if you don't think that you can follow your ideal path within that organization. Because unfortunately, with small business people, it's just a lot of the times it's not proactive. It's generally reactive, and small business owners make decisions on the fear of losing someone. And sometimes it's too late; they lose someone, and that forces them to be proactive. So you be proactive as the employee, and, you know, force them to stand up and recognize you and what you want to do within their business.
And don't be afraid to call the meeting. You know, don't be afraid to bring it up, because even if your performance is not at a level yet that's, you know, exceeding your results, you'll get direct feedback. So that's a hell of a lot better than not knowing. So you might not have got a pay rise. You're not quite performing up to the business owner's standard, but you don't. Sometimes that's not effectively communicated either. So by you calling the meeting and being driven to continue to improve, you're going to get direct feedback. And again, a lot of people think that should be a given anyway, but it just sometimes doesn't happen in small business. So I feel like it's a really proactive step to be able to have the courage. And look, I know everyone's trying to reduce friction points. They don't want to, you know, stir the pot, so to speak. But sometimes you don't look at it that way. Look at it as being a proactive colleague that's bringing this to the table. You know, put your thoughts out on the table, and any good employer are going to take that on board and give you direct feedback. So it's either going to be great because you've been exceeding results and you proactively got a plan forward, which they'll be excited about and help you get there, or they'll give you constructive feedback to say, if you want to get to this point, these are the things you really need to do, and then let's set that as a target, and if you achieve that, let's then implement that pay increase. So either way, it's a really positive step you can take as an employee.
One thing I've always liked about, you know, employees when I was an employee, and then employees that I now work with, and then even our business clients when having conversations with them, and to touch on the business clients, Nick, I think you said before, we've so many times come across great small business owners that are running incredible small businesses, and we say, so what's your remuneration? You know, what's your reviews like for your team's pay reviews? And they go, we don't do them. We've never done it. And they're like, shit. And like, it's like the penny drops. They're like, man, yeah, geez, my team are awesome. I really want to keep them. I better actually put something in place. So side note, back to the employee thing. One thing that I always appreciated and loved was an employee that takes a keen understanding in knowing how your business operates and how your business makes money. So the margins, how it operates, how hard everyone works, like what all bolts together to make it magic. When somebody understands or takes a keen understanding into how they fit into the big cog and machine that is a business, they can then come to those conversations with a, hey, this is how I've added value, or this is how I'm being successful in my role. And I think one of the, you know, best bits of advice that I've ever got was start the conversation. Just start the conversation, and you've got to learn from it and be open and willing to get the feedback that is going to help you progress in your career. And it's not good enough to rock in and say, hey, I've been in here a year, and put your hand out for something more than CPI. And then even then, my question was, you know, is CPI a basic human right and a requirement these days? Or, you know, as business, or with businesses that have crunching margins and increased costs and the rise in inflation, employees are facing inflationary impacts, their fuel's going up and their costs are going up. And when they put their hand out for CPI, is it the bare minimum that business owners need to do is give their employees CPI? What do you guys think of that?
It's obviously there for a reason. So at the end of the day, it has to be parallel with increased profit, really. Otherwise, where is your business going? But the problem is the cost of goods go up for your employee. We're going down another path here. So do the cost of goods for your business. So, yeah. Look, I think yes, because I think you should get CPI as the cost of living goes up, and as a business, I mean, you just got to have a look at your revenues and possibly increase your revenues. So, Otherwise, it's almost like investing. If you're not making CPI, you're going backwards. So as an employee, if you're not getting a CPI increase, you're going backwards every year. So yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, and I like what you said, Jace, in regards to find out where communication's really important is find out what the business owner's drivers are. You know, to me, particularly in small business, you might be the best teammate ever, you know, and focusing in the wrong areas, right, to where the business owner wants you to focus. So for me, it was always what's the focus of impact? As a business owner, if you can elicit that from that person, the employee or the employer, then you really can deliver to what's going to best enhance that business. And I think we've all sort of covered that, but particularly in those early days of small business, if you can really tap into that and find out what those drivers are, the business owner, you can deliver to that driver. And that's really important. Like you said, it's no point bringing the cakes in every day if the business is going, you know, is going to be bankrupt in 2 weeks. You know, they're going to throw the cake back in your face because that's just that survival instinct kicking in. And I say that jokingly, but it's more so to find out what's the focus of impact for the business owners and even the managers that you're working under, and then look to deliver in that, and then you flesh that out. All the other things are going to be just as important in time, but it's really important to understand that because there'll be different businesses at different levels, different cycles, and you want to be able to read the play, like we always talk about. You want to be able to read the play and deliver to that.
Jace, I was going to ask you a question, and you know, this is on the spot, because I've just thought about this, but I think you'll be able to answer it pretty easily. So being an accountant and obviously dealing with a lot of small businesses, and this is all about, as an employee, bringing up the conversation. So would your advice be to an employee to go with a suggested income? So, you know, hypothetically, I'm on $50,000 a year. I do some market research and I should be on 60. So is it a matter of saying, hey, I'm worth 60,000 and this is why? Or would you prefer someone come and say, look, I think I'm on 50,000. It hasn't been reviewed in a while. Can we sit down and have a pay review? Or do you think you should be going in there and saying, this is what I should be earning and this is why? Yeah, and this might sound silly, and we obviously don't want to get into a negotiation environment, but should you be going in at more than what you actually want? Because I think these are the things that people will be thinking about. Well, if I ask for a pay rise, how much am I asking for? Am I asking for 10%? Do I go in there with a figure? Do I go in for more knowing I'm going to get less? What would be your advice?
Very, very good question there, Nico. My flow of conversation that I'd recommend is basically going into the meeting and starting with all the positives about your role. You know, so start the conversation on a positive. You want your boss to be warmed up. You want to feel good. I know I like getting me a bit of a G up when somebody comes in and tells me how awesome the place is to work, how great their role is, all the things they love. That would be the first way to start off the conversation. Part two of the conversation would be to talk about the achievements. So all the ways that employee adds value to the business, the things they've done in the last year or however long since they've started or had their last pay review. And achievements aren't just how much they've billed. It might be cultural and value achievements. Like they might have organized things that make the place better to work, you know, like a table tennis tournament, and the head of the social committee. Like it doesn't just have to be about, I billed this much per month, so I need a pay rise. But you want to be able to articulate your achievements as an employee and what you're bringing to that organization. And on top of that, point number three that I have there is, get to the point at the end of what you're there for after you've warmed me up. But I think, Nick, the research that you do to understand your role, your years of experience, and what that salary band is so important, so you don't come in with the wrong expectation of what you deserve to be paid. And a good employer will generally know. And if they don't know, at least having that conversation, you say in the conversation, I've had a bit of a look at what the industry is paying for this role, and I'd love to discuss getting myself in line with that pay. Now, if you're on 50 and you want to go to 60, I personally think it would not be authentic or transparent to say you want 70, thinking that your boss is going to cut you back to 60. And that's just me personally and how I sit on it. But in saying that, I'm pretty sure when I was an employee, I would always round it up by 5 or 10,000, thinking my boss was going to cut me back down. Now, I don't like the idea of being cut back down. I think that open, transparent conversation of understanding what that salary band for the role you're in. And look, in industries like accounting, public practice, it's quite easy to go to like a hey salary guide and sit with an employee and say, there's a graph, you're in public practice, you're in Melbourne, you've been doing 3 years experience and you're halfway through your CPA, your salary band is here to here. And it's so transparent. And if they're below it, sure, you can have a conversation about what they need to do to be in it or why you're paying them less than that salary band if they're not quite there yet. But the research and having knowledge pre that conversation, I think it's paramount. I think it's super important.
Yeah, well answered, mate. And for me, that if someone, let's say there was a $6,000 increase that was coming based on industry standards and someone wanted 10, I would honour the idea, but show me what additional value you're bringing to the table, even put it in a presentation of what you're going to do over the next 12 months that makes me absolutely believe that this is going to be a good idea. Now, if I can see where that person's head's at and what they're wanting to deliver and I see the value in it, then I'm going to consider it, particularly if they've exceeded targets in the past, because they've already demonstrated great acumen in execution. And then if they're coming to me based on an increase of where I think they may be at, then show me what value that is. And then I can make a considered judgment of it, from that point of view. But that's putting yourself in the best situation if you were coming to me, because I want you to make it hard for me to say no on that 10 grand. And then I'm excited, you know, if... otherwise, it's going to be six.
100%. And look, I think for the business owners out there, you know, we touched on the example of like the landscape gardener with three employees, you know, a couple of apprentices and a qualified. You know, I think a lot of the times pays are quite structured, from salary bands to especially apprenticeships in trades and construction and other industries. You've got your first year, second year, third year, fourth year. Those pays are kind of set by the award and Fair Work. And it's then when you go from fourth year into fully qualified that you start having to, for the first time in 5-6 years of work, you're having to have the first conversation ever about what am I worth? So starting those conversations early so you can figure out how you can work with that business owner to be a core part of the future of their business. Working, and also I think, Nick, you said it really well about working out what you want. Maybe I can pass back to you for from the employee side, what do they want? And I think you articulated it really well.
Yeah, well, I think you need to decide if you're in the right position to follow the path you want. So, and you could unpack it. It's not just about income. It's about what do you want in life? What are you trying to achieve? Where are you trying to get to? Where do you want to live? And what does your income need to be to support that? And, you know, we unpack this stuff with financial planning. It's all about goals and objectives, not so much about money. But a lot of it is driven by money, or the money helps execute a lot of those goals and objectives. So understand where you want to be and what you want in life, and is your current role right for you, not just in relation to money. So I think it's extremely important. Instead of just, you know, this where it comes back to creating your own destiny, you're just sitting there and going, geez, I haven't had a pay rise in a while. Well, what are you doing about it? At the end of the day... It's owning the problem yourself and doing something about it and not just blaming your employer. So I think it's very important.
Just to touch on that, just to in an industry point of view, public practice is not an overly glorious, high paid role to be a public practice accountant. And a lot of the time our industry loses people to industry, where you go and work, you know, in agriculture, you're an accountant for an agriculture business, for example. Sometimes we see on our side is we get people coming back from industry, coming back into public practice. But the problem is they've been paid $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 more than a comparative role in public practice. And you've got to be able to talk about, you know, if you do want to come back to something that may suit your lifestyle, suit the job that you want to do, then it's not always about the dollar figure that you're being paid. If it's about satisfying your life goal or your, you know, what satisfies you from a job perspective rather than just a dollar figure you take home at the end of the week.
It's beautifully said, because again, what's the motivator of them not wanting to work there anymore?
Yeah.
Why are they coming to you? You know, so if you can elicit what those goals are and what those personal drivers are, it's amazing what you can, you know, what you can create. So, and it might be that they feel like they're taking that, they might feel on some level taking that step backwards, but it gives them so much more freedom in their lives, or there's more creativity, which they really invigorates them. You can't put dollar value always on that, right? So it's going, but if you could accelerate that person down the track in 3, 4, 5 years' time to go beyond where they were, but they're enjoying working for you, then that's a really exciting proposition. And we see people in finance like that, Nick, sometimes as well, and planning, that, you know, are paid more by the banks, but they want to work as a part of our industry because they can provide clients with choice, more choices, enjoyment. They're looking after the client long term. They're not changing roles every 3 months. It's like there's a lot of upside in regards to our industry, and we've seen people take substantial pay cuts just to want to be a part of something that's dynamic and exciting and grow with a business rather than be corporatized and outgrow their position in that business. So we see it quite often.
Great example. Yeah. That's a great example. Yeah. I think one thing we didn't touch on as well is from an employee point of view, it's also, what are you doing beyond just the hitting your KPIs and your targets, that kind of thing, but what are you doing to train and develop yourself and show that you are trying to excel in your career? So, you know, are you seeking development and training internally? Do you do your own research, training and development outside of work? And it depends the industry and the role you're in, but I know personally, growing up, and still do, I read a lot of books. I read a lot of books, and reading books and listening to podcasts and listening to audiobooks helps me in my day-to-day role. And I often talk to our junior team and other junior people that I come across, you know, when mentoring and doing different speaking roles across the industry in accounting, is what are you doing to set yourself apart from the rest? Because if you simply rock up and work 9 to 5 and go home and play Xbox or, you know, watch a movie, the knowledge and the world is going to slip you by because things move at a fast pace. Like even at the moment, like looking at blockchain and technology and cryptocurrency, and there'd be accountants out there that have never even taken the time to read into it or look into how it affects our job, for example. So keep in mind, as an employee, these are the extra things you can do, not just start the conversation on how do I get a pay rise or I deserve a pay rise, but arm yourself and be prepared with, what have you done from training and development point of view? What are your achievements and what are your expectations by researching the market that you're in?
That's brilliant, Jason. I think in this day and age, if you feel like you're not moving forward, you're not actually staying in the same position, you're going backwards. So I think it's really important. I know I've put probably about 50, 60, 70 grand into my own personal development throughout my 20s and 30s. Just to advance my own personal skills, to keep developing. Like I keep wanting to learn, wanting to grow. Even now at 50, it's like there's just that attitude of growing and growth. And again, it's I think everyone should be, you know, education doesn't stop when you leave school. This is an ongoing process. And the more you can put more tools in your toolkit to bring to the table, And again, linking it to results. Don't be the person that has all the certifications on the wall but never delivers on them. I've seen a few of them as well. But
Have you seen my office, Marty?
As soon as you can learn something, implement it. You know, implement it. Well, same with the books as well. It's a really cost-effective way to develop yourself. But implement it. When you read a strategy or you see something that you really like, you know, test it. You know, if it's to the betterment of the business, then test it. And I think it's a great way to develop.
I was doing a course called Business Blueprint, Marty, and you reminded me of Dale Beaumont's favourite saying. It was, you're either green and growing or you're ripe and rotting.
Yeah. I like that.
So be green and growing. Always be green and growing, because you don't want to be ripe and rotting. Not a good place to be.
Nice.
We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, hello@thenumbersgamepodcast.com.au. That's been episode 44 of The Numbers Game. It's been great to be back, guys. I've had an absolute blast. Marty, what was your key takeaway from this episode, mate?
Have the courage to start the conversation with your employer. Like, have that courage, be proactive about it, and set some great parameters and trust, have the confidence in your own value of what you're going to bring to the table. That's my key takeaway, Jace.
Mate, for me, it's extreme ownership. Own the problem. At the end of the day, it's your problem, even though you're in, you know, you're in a business that's not yours, but it is your problem. So you need to own that and do something about it. And look, for me, I just want to say that there's so much good advice here. Like, we are all business owners that employ numerous staff and have for a long time. So, you know, this is coming from us. So I think if you're an employee out there and you're listening to this, this is coming from people on the other side of the fence. So definitely take note, and hopefully people can take action.
Well, for me, guys, thanks for asking. It is okay.
What's your key takeaway, mate?
Now, you start the conversation, but do your research. Like, don't start the conversation and have nothing to talk about. Know your achievements, or know what you want to achieve. Know your path. So do a bit of a think process of where you're going, and then open that conversation with some research behind you. And you know what? Have the confidence. I completely agree with you guys. If the boss or the person you talk to slams you and tells you you're dreaming, you're probably in the wrong place. If you've gone in with the right heart and the right attitude and you get crap back, you're probably in the wrong place. And it's an employee's market out there. There's a huge amount of job opportunities, and I think this is the push you need to start the conversation.
Some great insights, gentlemen. So make sure, if you feel there's, I think there's a lot of value in this podcast, make sure you get it out there to family and friends. We want to support and serve more people out there. So don't keep us a secret. You can hook up with us on Instagram at the Numbers Game Pod. Catch up with the boys on LinkedIn. We're very active on LinkedIn. Great episode. Well, I'll let the listeners be the judge of that. But until next time, game over.